Welcome to the Afters Lockdown Podcast with your hosts, Taylor and Robbie.
What do you do when you come out? Do you just say hello? Like, that doesn't work.
I know, it feels weird. Last time we cut out the hello that we did at the beginning because it just sounded so strange, but I don't know. I think we should just get started.
Sounds good.
So I'm Taylor Lynn Strain.
And I'm Robbie Miles, and welcome to the AFTERS Lockdown Podcast. We're both tutors of the Bachelor of Arts Screen Production at AFTERS.
And we're going to be your hosts for this podcast. And we've created this, we hope, as just another way to keep the AFTERS community connected. And it's not meant to be a learning experience in any kind of way. It's really just Robbie and I having a chat. We're hoping to emulate what it might be if we were to run into students or staff in the hallways at AFTERS. And as we said in the last episode, our opinions are our own.
Yes, not those of the school or the Australian government.
Correct. Okay, well, let's kick off right away with a little bit of business. It was really great to get a lot of feedback, but I think an overwhelming note we got from some of the students who listened in to our first episode was how awful my audio was. So I've scurried up a microphone, so hopefully it's a little bit better this time.
This is, yeah, very much a work in progress with what equipment we can cobble together from inside our own homes while we're all somewhat disconnected and unable to source extra stuff. But, you know, all feedback is welcome, and, you know, each one will get that little bit better.
So I know we've both been crazy busy, but I did want to share something that I watched the other day. I've become a little bit obsessed with Bluey. Have you seen it?
Oh, it's adorable. I love it.
So cute. And I just needed something. I was like, I need to tune out from work and I just need something short and lovely and it's going to make me feel good. Yeah, Bluey, 7 minutes. Obviously, it's a kid's show, but it was just so lovely.
Well, I love, for example, Mystery Road. I absolutely adore it. And I went to try and watch some more of it. And I wasn't feeling it in this current environment. I need a Bluey. So I might try that. But yeah, I need something short and funny and light.
Totally. Except I'm super excited. Mystery Road season 2 is actually coming out, I think, this Monday.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to catch up.
Totally. Well, I mean, I was actually really lucky because when I did my Spars One to Watch, which is like a producer's, it was an initiative that I was part of. And as part of it, I was paired with Greer Simpkin, who's one of the producers on Mystery Road. And I was really lucky enough to sit in for part of the writer's room of the second season. And it was so incredible sort of listening to all the writer's work. So yeah, I'm doubly excited in a way to get to watch the second season.
That's what's kind of great about being a development nerd like you and I are, is like we want to see the strings. You know, we're the people who used to watch all the director's commentary and all the special features on DVDs.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the annoying thing about when you like hire a film these days. Like if you get one off iTunes, I'm always looking for the behind the scenes stuff, and it's so rare that they'll put them into the same degree that they used to do. Like I remember sitting down and watching hours worth of behind the scenes footage, but I don't know if anyone has recommendations for really amazing behind the scenes for films. I would love to know, because I love watching the making ofs.
I remember in years gone by on commercial television, they usually have these like 7 minute EPK type of things that would show off a little bit of behind the scenes footage of some blockbuster coming out that month. And, you know, we're in a very different world now. So those things would be on a DVD. But what I find is really great for that is the Q&A podcast with Jeff Goldsmith, where they'll screen a film and then they'll have like an in-depth 2-hour interview with the writer. And, you know, the writer was commonly there for the whole shoot, so you get a lot of behind-the-scenes stories, but also understanding how, you know, early-day writing stuff translated into what they did on the day.
You've recommended that podcast to me a bunch of times, so I've really got to listen to it. But I would love if any students had some of their own content that's floating about, whether it's a podcast, a short film online, a web series, let us know, because we're so happy to shamelessly plug them. And also, I'd love to watch them, listen to them.
Yeah, we'd love to be talking about stuff that you're doing and working on more than, you know, anything that we recommend necessarily. Although, do listen to the Q&A, I insist, please. It's very, very good.
All right, shall we get into our topic?
Yes, terrific. Now, this topic was suggested to us by Caitlin in third year, and it's one we both thought, yep, this is ideal for the second episode, and it was around confidence.
She sent that email, and I was reading it, and I was just like, yes, this is so great, and that's why I was so happy to get these emails. I just called up Robbie straight away, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like, we've got to do this. This is so fantastic. Let's make it the next episode, because I just think it's such a relevant conversation to have at any stage in your career, is how you use your confidence, if you have it, how it affects you.
Absolutely. And, you know, the best definition of confidence I've ever heard, and the one that sticks with me, is that confidence is just the reasonable expectation of success based on past experience.
Yeah, can you just explain that maybe in layman's terms for me?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, what I was saying there is, you know, if you've achieved something previously, you know, produced something or even just set up a light, you can be confident going into the next time you do it because you've had success at doing it. So I can be reasonably certain that this thing that might be a little more advanced, but still the general principles are the same, I can be reasonably confident that I will succeed in this because I have this previous experience. At the same time, you know, you could go into a situation that you've never been in before. And in so many ways, every film we make, nothing is like the one that came before it. And, you know, sometimes it works out well. And sometimes you know, I think I said once, every 6 months or so, something comes along and kicks me in the ass and, you know, reminds me that, oh, no, you've got a long way to go. And I used to be terrified of it and it would affect me for weeks. And now I seek it. And oddly enough, this week I had one. That was huge. And I was more quickly able to get to the other side of it, actually through conversations with you and relying on my peer group and saying, okay, well, it's shattered my confidence in one aspect because, it was something that I hadn't done before that blew up in my face. But I was quickly able to get to the other side of that and go, okay, well, I know why that happened. And it's not, oh, I'm entirely to blame and I need to, you know, beat myself up about it. It was like, okay, well, now what a huge learning. Anyway, sorry, rant over.
You and I are very good at ranting. Yeah, you've touched on so many things that I wanted to talk about with this. And one of them that I'll just jump straight to is talking about that idea of sharing the load. I think building confidence can be helped in a lot of ways by having a really trusted support network around you to act as your cheerleaders. So, you know, obviously with the experience you had this week, you and I were chatting about it the whole way through. And even though, you know, it was your sort of thing to tackle, I hope in some ways by talking it through, it just allowed you to, I don't know, take the pressure off just a little bit. Like, I think the struggle could be if you've got that idea of you can be confident because you have done something before. A lot of students, particularly when they start out in year one, they really haven't had the opportunity to have any kind of experience. And what I would say to that is you can have confidence without having done anything because you have intention and you have desire and you have persistence. I mean, it's okay to have not done something before. I think it's like you say on film, we get to do things for the first time a lot. And confidence does come a little bit for me from exposure, like almost forcing yourself to do things. I think one of the things which you probably have a lot of great thoughts on, which I think can be a challenge, is this idea of networking.
Sure.
Because students really get this idea that when you start out, it's going to make or break whether you're going to get a job. And particularly if we're talking about people who might have some feelings of social anxiety, that idea of being in this huge crowd of people and that you know you're meant to do the right thing in a networking event because this is how you get jobs in the film industry.
Yeah.
I do remember the first few times I was at those events, I was just like, this is so overwhelming. What am I even doing here kind of thing?
Mm.
What do you think about like those networking events?
I think the best way to approach that would be to completely put it on Front Street, be open about it. Like you could open a conversation with someone about that and say, hey, I'm actually struggling here. Like something acknowledged, same way a problem shared is a problem halved, by acknowledging whatever elephant is in the room. So this event is kind of a nightmare for me. How do you do? you know, I think to the right people, the kind of person that you would want to work with, I couldn't help but be charmed by that. You know, vulnerability and honesty is an amazing way to connect with people. Similarly, if you're going into that situation worried that, oh, you know, I don't belong here, or who am I to talk to this person? You know, we're all just people. Strangers will be polite to you, especially at a networking event. So as long as you're not jumping on the front foot of like, oh my God, I need to get my elevator pitch done because my entire career rests on speaking to this one person. Taylor is furiously shaking her head at that. And I've seen people be bursting to get this thing out. And I think you need to start with how can I make a new friend? And you don't need to talk about your project. If you recognize them, ask them about theirs. Or tell them about, like, everyone, you know, loves to be recognized for their work. Or even ask them something that was in the film news that week. You know, read articles on IF or Film Inc. or Deadline or The Hollywood Reporter and go into that networking event with, hey, like, what's your opinion on, you know, this writer's strike that's happening in the US? Or, you know, anything that was in the current affairs that day, they might have something really interesting to say about it. And it'll give you a chance to take note of whatever they were interested in and follow up with an email a week later and say, hey, here's a podcast about that thing we talked about. Hope you're well. So, you know, my suggestion in those situations is be honest, be vulnerable, and, you know, realize that, you know, even someone at the peak of their career is potentially still very socially awkward.
Yeah. And well, okay. So I, again, have so many thoughts on that, but I thought maybe at this point we could have a talk about our own personal journeys. Because I think, interestingly enough, you and I probably came at confidence in different levels, or at least when we met each other for the first time, which is, you know, how many years ago at Afters? 10, did we say last episode? Yeah, because I...
It was 11.
Oh, shush. Okay, so the first time I studied at Afters, I'd pretty much come, similar to a lot of the BA students, straight from high school. It was the inaugural year for this foundation diploma that, you know, we had people in our year varying from 17 years old to 60 plus. Everyone had different lived experiences. And I've always been shy, basically. And I had crippling shyness when I was younger and I couldn't talk in front of people. I would go bright red and I'd really struggle. And it wasn't until I came to Afters and it was that exposure and that experience and being around everyone and also discovering, I do remember there literally being a point where I was at a networking event where I'd sort of gone along the path and realized I wanted to be a producer. But I realized at this networking event that everyone was also shy like me. And I was like, if I'm going to be a producer, I think one of the things I need is confidence. And I just took it as a skill that I needed to work on. And it was from there that I did start challenging myself. And now everyone who meets me finds it so bizarre to think that I was ever that one who just couldn't speak up at all. And I think in part of that process, I probably swung too far the other way and did get a little bit too loud at sometimes. And I think that my voice was the only one that matters. And now I'm hoping I've come back to somewhat of an equilibrium between the two, because it's a balancing act, confidence. It can go from being something really valuable for you to be strong and feel present in a conversation with people or presenting an idea to being the one who doesn't let anyone else speak. So I feel like for me, confidence has to be matched with humility and modesty. And I definitely always have to keep reminding myself to take a couple of doses of those. But I'm definitely now more comfortable. I think somebody also said to me one time, and slightly off topic, but that idea of when I started jogging for the first time, I was like, oh, this is so embarrassing. Everyone's watching me. And somebody just said, like, nobody is looking at you. Everyone else is way more concerned about themselves than they are of whatever it is you're doing. And so I think there's this idea that you sort of go when you're in one of those events, oh, people will think I'm silly, or people will think I'm strange, or I don't know how to talk to people. But everyone is so caught up in feeling that about themselves that sometimes it's honestly a relief when you're at one of those networking events and somebody comes up and is like, hey, that thing was really great. I'd just love to introduce myself. What did you think of that?
Mm.
And then somebody else who's been standing in their little group, they then get the opportunity. But it's also totally fine to go to those events and not talk to anyone and just immerse yourself in them for a little while. Like, I went to so many networking events and I would just hang out with the one person I went with and we would talk and I just immersed myself in that environment. You don't have to feel the pressure because you're at a so-called networking event to do the networky part of it. And as you continue working in the industry, what becomes wonderful is you start to recognize people, you know, and so you start talking with them and wandering around this event, and then you might have the chance to talk to some new people. But like you said, Robbie, those events are about meeting new people who will be your colleagues and friends in this industry. It's not about, quick, help me find somebody, anyone, to help me make something or be someone. It's better to go in as you are to those events and just start to become one of those people that you recognize at events and that you get to have the conversations with. And then that person, when they knowing you're so lovely or great to talk with, have great opinions and ideas, when they're thinking about someone for a job, that's when they'll go, oh, remember Taylor? We had this great conversation at events. She said she wanted to work with producing. You know, this job we have could be great for her. Let's get in touch. It's a long game. And really, those networking events for me are not so much about finding a job or making a show as it is being part of my community, my film community, and getting to see people and touch base and, you know, check in, really.
You know, one thing for me is, you know, having been bullied as a kid, feeling a part of a group and feeling part of a team is hugely important to me. And it's something that when I feel like I'm excluded, or if I see someone being excluded, that's red rag to a bull for me, upsets me very, very much. But in those networking situations, I find that I might get a level of bravery if I'm helping someone else out. So say I'm there with a friend who's like, oh, I really want to speak to that person, I don't know how. And I could be like, well, I don't have any stake in that. I'm not afraid to go up there. Come on, let me introduce you to them, even though I've never met them before, which can work as well.
That's my favorite thing to do. Literally my favorite thing to do is to meet someone new at a networking event, have a conversation with them, have a chat, and then see someone else, meet them and say, oh, have you met such and such? They're a XYZ. And I don't know, it's just, there's something really lovely about that active listening to someone, really enjoying their conversation, and then being the facilitator for that person to someone else. For me, it's a lovely way to remember names, to sort of focus on a person and be really interested and invested. And I just think every time you talk to a stranger, I think there was something about this on, I was listening to it on All in the Mind, that ABC podcast or something, but this idea that every time you talk to a stranger, it's this huge mood enhancer because you're getting a totally different perspective outside your bubble, even though it's still the film bubble, but it's not your close friends that you always hash things out with. So that's something I definitely love doing as well, is facilitating introductions.
Certainly. And, you know, with a something that Caitlin said about a journey to growing more confident, you know, for me, I grew up, my parents ran hotels and motels. So I was always around older people, and I was always taught to, you know, be polite, shake people's hands, look them in the eye, you know, from 3 or 4. So a lot of that always came naturally to me, and I wasn't, you know, afraid of talking to older people. But the difference between you and I is that I had only my own experience of film, like reading a lot of books, watching a lot of movies in the video store I worked in. And so I had this assumption that I would be a great indie film director with no basis and no experience. So I was hugely overconfident. And, you know, overconfidence isn't confidence, it's just, you know, arrogance. And I was so ignorant of what it really took to make a film. You know, I joked with some students before, you know, I made a semi-autobiographical romantic drama feature when I was 20, and it's absolutely god-awful. But I'm really glad I did it, because it taught me how much I didn't know. And then that led me to go to film school. And, you know, I made a huge mistake when I first went to film school, which is that I was there to display what I knew, not to actually learn. I was like, hey, I want validation and proof that I'm a filmmaker, because that's what I've always thought I was. And it took a long time and, you know, a few kicks in the butt to like realize, oh, there's so much to learn about this. And, you know, the real confidence in it isn't, you know, yes, we're going to do this and this is going to work and I'm a genius. It's, oh, this takes a lot of people and they're all really, really skilled. And being able to comfortably say, hey, I don't know, there's people who are better at this than me. I should work with them and learn from them. You know, that was the biggest shift in thinking that it took for me, is that I didn't need to prove what I could do. I needed to show that I was comfortable with other people's skill and deferring to superior knowledge.
But I think something else worth talking about is this idea of, you know, when you're working with people who are overly confident. And again, just something Caitlin mentioned in her email, that idea of some people say you have to have a bit of a hard shell to work in this industry. And she was wondering about what it's like to work with people who are very, very confident when perhaps you're not feeling necessarily as confident yourself, or people who have a real assurity about what it is, who they are and what it is they're doing. And I feel like that could go one of two ways. It's somebody who's loud and a leader, or somebody who potentially is not as collaborative as you would hope someone would be. What do you think about that?
You want to create an environment where people feel comfortable saying things, because the hard shell thing, and there might be people out there with a particularly big ego, and that ego to me is always hiding something. It's usually masking a level of insecurity. Some people might create an air of infallibility, but what happens with that is it isolates them. And even if you have a better idea, or if there's something that would work better, it's almost like they automatically have to refute it, because it threatens their status as you know, perfect and good at what they do. And the truth is, you'll be even better at what you do if you can accept that you don't know everything. You know, the best directors out there aren't the best because they've got a single, you know, myopic vision of it's exactly this way. They're the best because they take on the opinions of people who might go, oh, you know, the script supervisor might say, if they said the line this way, or And I think it takes a lot of bravery and confidence to accept help.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, having just worked with Lee Whannell on The Invisible Man, it was really something so lovely that he said to the crew right at the beginning, and he reiterated at the end, was that he never takes a film by credit because he sees the film as the crew's. They're the ones who made it. They're the ones who collaborate with him and bring the film to life. And he never feels right taking that a film by credit, which I think that's really lovely. What I wanted to touch on with the hard shell, you know, this idea, you have to have a hard shell to work in this industry. And I don't necessarily agree with it, because that would probably preclude a lot of people. And I actually remember, it was funny, I remember the first time I ever went to therapy. Highly recommend therapy. But the first person I ever went to see was just pretty much said to me, well, maybe this isn't the industry for you if you're not coping, because it's always going to be high pressure. Some people, you know, presidents have that high capacity to deal with things, and that's just who they are as people. And some people don't. And maybe this just isn't the industry for you. And I just couldn't, I think now on reflection, perhaps he was goading me, but I was just outraged. I was like, how can that be? This is what I love. And yeah, I was really upset about that. But then my reflection on it and my work on it for myself is actually, you don't need to have a hard shell. In fact, having some softness or fragility to, you know, being sensitive can be a fantastic tool as a filmmaker. What I would say instead of having a hard shell is, I think it's really valuable for everyone to have coping mechanisms. And in addition to that, knowing how to be adaptive. So for me, one of the things I learned when building my confidence is I really thought about trying to tune into the energy of the other person. And I hope that doesn't sound like very like woo-woo or whatever, but it was more about being present in a conversation and just trying to feel out the energy that that person was putting out so I could match it and stay on the same plane, instead of having to be really up all the time. If you're talking to somebody who's calm and being generous, you can just settle into that. And also not being fearful in a way of not doing it right, just trying to recognize the environment around me and respond to that. It definitely helped me in those environments to just think about how I'm placing myself in this situation. And, you know, I'll still walk away from conversations sometimes and just be like, oh, Taylor, you idiot, why did you say that? Like, you know, that moment where it's like, you do that little thing and you think about it for such a long time. I definitely still have those things. But finding a way to not beat yourself up about it later, or to, you know, practically consider it, I think is worthwhile. So yeah, hard shell, I don't think so, but definitely coping mechanisms.
Someone that I worked with years ago had said, oh, this is, you know, it's just business. You know, you don't have enough of a killer instinct. And I said, well, every decision I've made and being true to myself and exactly who I am has gotten me every good thing I've ever had. So I'm not changing or compromising that for anyone just because you think that will make you, you know, more successful. That's not to say I don't have a lot of things to learn. But, you know, the best way to put this, I can say, is that I am obviously very, very enthusiastic. And like I said before, having been bullied as a kid makes me a real joiner. Like I really want to get involved and I like being included. And, you know, I have let that in the past actually really damage me, because there are people who could recognize that in me in a way that I didn't recognize in myself. And they're like, great, this person will do a lot of stuff for us for free. And starting to actually value myself more and say, no, I bring a lot to the table. I have these skills and I'm kind and I'm forthright and I work hard. You know, those things have immense value. And so don't let people take advantage of you just because you're enthusiastic. You don't need to have a hard shell and push them all away, but you need to recognize that, you know, you have value. And this is, you know, again, I can't recommend therapy or a psychologist, you know, more highly, because, you know, it can help you with some of that. I think the confidence thing comes from sometimes maybe not valuing yourself enough.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And saying, I do belong here in this room and I can add value, and I'm just lucky to be here. And for all of you, especially, you know, our students, you're at the National Australian Film, Television and Radio School. This is where you come to learn how to do this professionally, and you all have something to say and something to bring to it, and that's, you know, very valuable and very important.
Yeah, it's so true. The other thing I would say, just talking about therapists and counselors, I just think we're actually so lucky at AFTERS because they do have a counselling service. There's details in all the student handbooks about free counselling sessions that students can get, and it can be for anything. And I think, you know, if you're having any anxiety about confidence or about stress or anxiety or whatever else it is, you can definitely reach out to them. And I think it might be worthwhile in this episode for us to put the contact details in our show notes. Students can obviously go through Student Centre, but I think you said something really great about going to seek counselling or a psychologist.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, if you want to get stronger or run faster, you go to the gym. And, you know, it's not about fixing something broken. It's about enhancement. It's about growth. It's about everything. And I think there should be no stigma or shame whatsoever in it. And I'm so happy to see society's, you know, changing in that way. But, you know, I'll put my hand up. It took me a really long time and I wish I'd done it, you know, 10 years earlier. So it's just exercise for your brain.
And it's so good. I honestly think everyone should do it because it just helps you have insight into your mind. And also it allows you to talk through anything you're considering or thinking about or potentially negative thoughts you're having, but with somebody who's completely unbiased and unconnected to you in any kind of way. And sometimes just hearing yourself trying to explain a situation to someone can give you all the answers you're actually looking for. As opposed to it being so loaded when you're talking to, you know, somebody who's connected to it in some kind of way. So, yeah, I agree. I highly, highly recommend it. And especially because for students, they have access to it for free through AFTERS. I would find it crazy not to take advantage. What an amazing... is that wrong of me to say?
But interesting word choice, but yes.
Well, yeah, but like, just, it's so vital. It's so helpful. So I just think it's an amazing...
No, I meant to say that it would be crazy not to.
Oh, well, you know I didn't mean it like that.
I know.
Alrighty, well, I feel like we could keep talking about this forever, but shall we call it there?
Yes, that sounds good.
All right. Well, I think it's at this point that we say something we're grateful for.
I am incredibly grateful for the feedback, for students actually coming to us so quickly and, you know, listening to the show and telling us what they want more of. And also, you know, tied into that is very thankful to Melba for helping us launch.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Now mine's going to sound super silly compared to yours. Okay. So yes, thank you so much to Melba. It's been amazing. And to students, I had a little tear up when I got some of that feedback. So I really appreciate it. But for my grateful, I was just going to say, I'm actually really grateful. This is going to sound silly, but for my morning coffee. I know that sounds crazy, but it's just a part of my routine that hasn't changed. And I take my dogs for the walk every day and that's the highlight of the day for them. And they get really excited. And then I get home and I just have this big smile on my face thinking about having my coffee. So I'm just feeling really good about coffee right now. But I did want to say I'm really missing the chats with Fuda and Imogen at the cafe. So
yeah,
a bit
time.
Of a double-edged sword. Yeah. So grateful for students and feedback and Melba and coffee. So please keep sending us your feedback. You know, if there's topics you'd like us to dive into, we've got a couple of suggestions we'd love to look at.
Yes, and there was another great suggestion from B, also in year three, about getting started stories, which is something that, you know, I'm fascinated by how anyone got their start. So yeah, it's something we're very keen to explore in a future episode.
Okay, brilliant. Well, episode two down, and can't wait to do this again.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Speak soon.
Thanks for listening to the AFTERS Lockdown podcast. Check the show notes for credits and links.